experience Trek and Hope with us, we have James.
Hi, my name is James, and I'm an alcoholic. And I am extremely nervous right now. It may have something to do with the grande I just drank with a couple of extra shots of espresso. I have to say, Yanish, thank you for asking me to speak. This is a true honor to come up here and to share my experience and my strength and hope with you. I've spoken in front of a large crowd before, but for some reason I just feel really, really nervous right now. And please forgive me, I'll warm up here or cool off because I'm hot. let's see here. I have to say, through the grace of God and to the people in this room and to my sponsor and to other others in AA across this country, I've been sober since December 14th of 2000. And I would not be sober if it weren't for you and if it were not for us for service and if it weren't for the higher power in my life today. My home group is Northside Freedom Group in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. I've been coming up here for a couple of years, and I've gotten to grow and to know quite a few of you. And you make it so that when I'm up here, I feel good. I feel like I'm at home. And I also want to say thank you to New York City and the New York City Equipa Host Committee, because you guys did an awesome job. And there's like 4,789 something people that will go back home and that will share with others their experience of what they received here, the love that they received, and the strength that they received from the people of New York City. You know, I was talking to my sponsor earlier today, and I'm like, what do I say in 20 minutes? And, talk fast. And I'm like, okay, I can do that. So if I start talking really fast, it's because I'm going to get this rush feeling, and he's going to give me a warning sign. So I can tell you that I am the fifth boy, the baby, out of five. That's fifth, yeah. And all of my three of my brothers have passed on. I have one other brother left, and he lives in Atlanta. My mom died when I was 19, and after she died, about 2 months after that, I started to drink and to smoke some outside source. And the Oklahoma City police decided that I shouldn't be on the road, and they took me to jail because I was throwing up on the side outside of my car while a friend of mine was driving my car. That proceeded about 2 months later. I got in trouble again. And at that time, my father had no idea that I was drinking. For about another year or so, I decided, this was around 89. I moved to Dallas for about 4.5 years. And, you know, I wasn't ready. I was 21. And Dallas was a big candy factory for me. Lots of candy, and not the kind that you like, not like suckers and things like that. I think some of you know what I mean. And it became a every night 10-cent well drink, starting at 9 to 12, pretty much every night of the week. The weekends were the drug, were doing the things that kept me up through the weekend. And I don't know if I can use that word. Okay. Drugs. Okay. So, I did drugs. And, I did lots of those things down there, and I moved around a lot. And within the four-year period, I've lived in 9 different places. I lived in my car for 2 weeks. I could not understand, and my father couldn't understand why it was that he had to keep sending me money to pay for my car payment, my insurance, my rent. He just didn't understand it. I pretty much really understood it because I knew where all the money was going. I was a horrible dealer. I didn't understand the concept of just deal and not take and or give away. So wasn't any good at that. I moved back home, and I proceeded to pretty much go through immediate withdrawal. because for the past 4 years, you know, I was pretty much drinking every single night and going out every single night. And I think there was one night I didn't go out, and I believe it was like New Year's of 1989, I'm sorry. And it was just another night. When I moved home and I went through the withdrawal and I got a job and I started working and I got a car again, I started becoming somewhat a productive member in civilization, I guess you can say, society. I started to venture out again. And within about three, four years after that, I decided that I was going to go out one night with a group of friends from work and on a Thursday. And by Sunday, I had done enough chemical, I had put enough chemicals in my body and I had drank enough to where it sent me to the ER. Excuse me. And I had an OD. I had a heart rate of 220 and a blood pressure of 100 over 200 or something like that. Anyway, I almost died. And it became a realization to me that I did have a problem. And that was my first introduction to AA because I went to treatment within the week after that. And I stayed sober for about a couple of months and relapsed and got sober for a couple of months and relapsed. And at that point in time, I wasn't having the need to stay sober. I was like, okay, well, my sponsor said, you know, do this. And so I did get a sponsor before I got a treatment. And, you know, I worked the steps to the best of my ability at that time. My ability changed as years went on. My will changed. And, you know, I know that in 97 was the year that my brother died. He died of AIDS. And, you know, at that present time, AA was in my life. My sponsor was a big, big, huge support in my life. And the people in Alcoholics Anonymous helped me to bury my brother and take care of his estate and things like that. That was also the same year that we went to Ikipon, D.C., I had to go back about a couple of years. When I was sober, I went to Ikipon, Estes Park, Colorado. And that was an experience that was really crazy, being up in the mountains and nowhere to go and just seeing nature. And mooses. However you want to say it, it's fine with me. You know, that was awesome, being part of nature. And but I remember when we went to D.C., and I really was not happy because we didn't get the conference, and I was all pissed off, and I went back to the hotel all by myself and sat and sulked. And at that time, my sponsor had me in charge of travel, and we took 50 Oklahomans up to D.C., and about 35, 40 of them had never left the state, so that was an experience. And I remember that on the plane, they were making so much noise that the flight attendant called me to the front and told me, if you don't calm your people down, we will land this plane and you will get off. So I'm like, okay. So I gave them that message, and of course you could hear a pin drop. And, you know, but as I said, that when we weren't awarded the conference, I really didn't care about anybody else. I was pissed. We should have had it. I don't even remember who got it at that point in time. So wherever it went in 98, I believe. I mean, I really didn't care about anyone at that point in time. There were four people that did not make it onto the plane the following day, and I didn't care. My sponsor was like, where are they? I don't care. They know how to get here. They knew how to get there, so they should know how to get back. And what made it so bad and what really pissed me off is that they beat us back in Oklahoma City. And so I grew resentment right then and there. For some reason, a couple of months later, I decided that I needed to try some more experience. I needed to see what Zimas taste like. I'm going to go relapse just to see what something tastes like. That wasn't it. I basically stopped working on self. I stopped helping others. I stopped doing what my sponsor asked me to do. I stopped praying to God, and I stopped coming to meetings. I grew a big resentment against Alcoholics Anonymous. They were a bunch of crazy people. I'm tired of hearing about their problems, blah, 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 blah. So, you know, out there when I was using, I pretty much hit a mental bottom at that point in time. Nothing was getting any better. Nothing was getting any worse. I remember the Alcoholics Anonymous. I remember I had friends who actually cared about me, who actually wanted to know how my day was going, who actually wanted to be around me, who actually wanted to talk to me to see what it was that I could do to help them in some way or another. And, you know, that feeling, that yearning, it hit me pretty hard. And but the guilt of coming back into the rooms was pretty hard. You know, I was about 34 years old at the time. And when I went back into the rooms, I told a friend of mine to come pick me up for a meeting. And I walked into the rooms to my home group, and there was about 25, 30 teenagers in there. And, you know, but they had something I didn't have. They had like a day, they had a week, they had a month, they had a couple of years of sobriety. So, you know, I had to remove the pride, I had to remove the ego, and I had to realize that they were doing something that I was not able to do. And to me at that point in time, for a young person of that age to want to get sober and clean, to be in high school, to deal with high school things today, I thought that was amazing. So I listened to them. And, you know, my sponsor told me that I needed to start doing some step work. And I said, okay. And, you know, I went through the steps, and not in any particular speed. It took me several months to even want to do the fourth and fifth step. But in that period of time, someone asked me to sponsor him. And I asked my sponsor, I said, you know, I haven't finished all the steps yet. What do you think about this? And he's like, James, God has put someone in front of you to help. So I said, okay. Stay ahead of the steps. That'll help me work the steps even more. I said, okay. You know, my sponsor at that time he still is alive. 9 foot, or not 9 foot, that's what we call. about six, seven or something like that. And skinny guy, biker dude, tattoos and all that stuff. And, but it's something that he had a heart of gold. He cared about my life. He did not want me to go back out. So, you know, I worked the steps with him, and he had about 8 sponsees, and I was the only one that didn't have a leather jacket and didn't have a motorcycle. But that was okay. I still loved and cared about them, and they still loved and cared about me. You know, I remember that when I came back in, that I knew that in order for me to stay sober, I had to get involved in service. Because I knew that it helped me. Service helped me to become who I am today. And, you know, I got involved in our young people's committee, and I stayed involved in that for, in fact, I just rotated off our advisory board, and I've been on advisory for 4 years extra than I should have been. Some people just don't seem to want to stay, and they have other avenues that they'd rather take, and that's okay. But, you know, I remember when a couple of us decided that we wanted to try to bid for Icky Poggin, and we went to Louisville, Kentucky. And, you know, we stood up there saying that Oklahoma's back, and we are willing to do whatever it takes. No matter how long it takes, we're willing to do. And, you know, we went through Portland and Orlando and New Orleans and L.A. And, you know, the older people in Alcoholics Anonymous in Oklahoma were just a little bit kind of tired of us. Because, you know, one weekend there's we called it OSHRPA. It's the Oklahoma State Roundup of Young People. And so either one weekend it's an OSHRPA event, and then the next weekend it's an IKIPA event. Or then the same weekend it's an IKIPA and OSHRPA event, Friday and Saturday night. So, you know, they didn't see the point of why we were having these events, and they really didn't understand why we were bidding for IKIPOG. They thought that we were just going out and having fun and raising all this money just to blow it. And, you know, that wasn't the case. When we were finally awarded the conference, they actually were so welcoming and so open to being a part of that conference and wanted it to succeed. It was amazing. It brought our young people and our older people in Alcoholics Anonymous together. And that was God's design. I truly believe in that. You know, I've been very, very blessed in this program. You know, I've had to go visit a couple of sponsees in prison. Well, not prison, city jail. You might as well call it prison. Because they decided that, A wasn't the way for them. You know, my heart goes out to them. My heart goes out to anyone that relapses and doesn't make it back. You know, but I have to realize that God is in control, and that's something that it took me a while to find that out. No matter what position I'm in, no matter what type of service work I'm doing, God's in control of the whole situation. You know, my home group has been dear to me from the very beginning. And I can tell you that my home group is it's a foundation for people coming into the program and learning what this program is about. You know, we're pretty heavily in the traditions. It's pretty strange for a couple of reasons. It's pretty much known in our pamphlet that Wednesday night we have traditions meetings. And about 9 months ago, it was a very low attendance. And within the past year, at least 30 people have been in there nearly almost every Wednesday night. And it's a mixture of young people and it's a mixture of older people in AA. And I think that is awesome because they're wanting to know how this program continues to work, how it started, and hopefully the vision of the future for it. And, you know, and that is something that I try to do and I try to express to people today. The love and service what Alcoholics Anonymous has given to me is something that I want to continue and just will upon other people. Unfortunately, there are those people that won't make it, and there are those people that continually want to stay, you know, in the backgrounds, and that's okay. Because when they are ready, they will move forward. And, you know, I like I said, I'm a blessed person, and you know, about back in November, I lost my job of 9 years, and people in AA just picked me up. They kept me from falling to the wayside, and no one ever left my side. For a couple of weeks, I had people pretty much calling me every day. What are you doing? Are you out of bed? Get out of bed. Get out of bed. And, you know, I'm coming over. Get out of bed. And they made sure I was going to meetings. They made sure that I was eating. They made sure that I was staying in contact with other people at AA. You know, and a friend of mine, I've been blessed with this program, with many, many friends in AA across this country. Icky Pod did wonders for our state. You know, we had a situation in which I know that there was some concern about what it would do to Oklahoma. Would the young people die or would they increase? And, you know, due to others of our advisory board, we tried to have the conference for our YPAW in Tulsa, which is about an hour and 45 minutes from the city. And unfortunately, Tulsa didn't seem to be that eager. And so pretty much a year went by after we hosted IKIPAW to where we decided to keep it in Oklahoma City, to keep our YPAW in Oklahoma City. And it struggled for just a couple of months. But I can tell you today that our conference was in July and it was successful. There were people at that conference and people enjoyed the speakers and new contacts were made. Networks were made. That is one thing that I try to instill upon my sponsees and to anybody else that comes to me. Increase your network of friends in this program because I cannot do it by myself. Or no one should do it by themselves. And, you know, the other just tremendous, exciting part of this program is that I've gotten to meet some really great and awesome people. And, you know, I've gotten to meet someone who has been just a super, super human being to me. And she has, she's made my life a lot pretty easy, especially during IKIPAW, before the conference happened. That'd be Megan B. And I'm probably sure I wore her out to death. Because there were some things I didn't know, but she walked me through it. And in that, I've gotten to meet other people in this program. And, you know, I told my sponsor, and I told a couple of friends, I said, I'm speaking in a clubhouse, and I don't know how that happened here in New York, that I found out. And what an honor. You know, I think this pretty much comes close to chairing the conference, because people who did not know me that well elected someone who was a drug dealer, who was a manipulator, who was a liar, who pretty much took as much financial means from his family as he could, and who was a cold-hearted person and didn't care about anyone. This is an honor to me. You know, I love the city. My friends that came up with us, they found out why I like to come up here so much. It's the people. And, you know, if there's anything that I can say, or if there's anything that I have said that has made any sense to anyone, one thing I can say is that no matter how much you feel like not going to one committee meeting or not doing this or not being of service, thinking that someone else will do it, you know, someone else can. But something that I realize is that if God has put something on my heart to do, then I am to do it. You know, that He will get other people to do things. But I know that when I am asked to do something that I'm told to do it by my sponsor, I want to do it today. Because so many people have been there for me. And that's all.